Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Live from Quail Hollow, the 2021 Wells Fargo Championship is back. Well, technically tomorrow, but the festivities are underway. Live from Quail Hollow, tons of golfers, golf fans, and a lot of charlatans out here walking the course. We are here in Quail Hollow, just behind the driving range. If you're out and about, if you're on the way, always when we're here, as you walk by, say what's up, throw up a hand. We're here in the tent. Already met a couple of listeners this morning. Love being out and about again. That's one of the things that I know I missed over the past year of the pandemic. And obviously, you know, with sports shutting down, events going away, and then us being in a remote location, either in my case from the doghouse or, you know, Mac and Bone and Wilson and Norfleet from home, this is a welcome sight. And we got celebrity sightings. Darren Gant's walking around out here. It doesn't get much bigger than Darren Gant walking around. A Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, Darren Gant, walking around today. And we'll try to throw a headset on him if Gant's got some time for us. But coming up here in about 40 minutes, actually about an hour, we'll chat with the voice of the Braves, Chip Carey. We'll talk about Huascar Ulloa's grand slam last night. This guy's putting on a Shohei Ohtani type of show this year, shoving on the hill and then hitting dingers at the plate. So Chip Carey in just a bit. But first, we welcome in Smoke Ludwig joining us here midway through the show during the lunch hour. Smoke Ludwig, how you doing, buddy?
I just got a final done with, so I guess I'm doing all right.
Okay. All right. Well, look, I'm glad you're back, and we're talking about the greatest rookie seasons in sports history. The text line's blowing up, and I actually want to get to something else, maybe a little bit similar, that you brought up earlier, I think this week. But the greatest rookie seasons in sports history. I know you're coming in cold here, but if I threw to you just off the cuff, greatest rookie season in all of sports history, what jumps off the cuff to you?
Well, I think I was listening to Mike Maniscalco. He said Randy Moss. That one's definitely up there. There's a couple letters. When I think of rookie seasons, I instantly go to NASCAR. There's quite a few rookie seasons like Tony Stewart, Davey Allison, Jimmy Johnson, all immediately jumped on and had great careers to start in their first year and were instantly contending for a title. But, I mean, there's a lot of instances where you could go with a lot of players. I remember Yasiel Puig during his rookie year. He came out like a wrecking ball and just completely stunned a nation, became a fan favorite instantly. Now, it didn't work out after that, but or for the most part, compared to what he thought he was going to be. But, I mean, that was a rookie campaign that I remember very fondly.
Well, that was a strong one. It was a great one. And texters writing in throughout the show here. How about this one, Smoke? Somebody saying Jeff Gordon's rookie season belongs on the list of greatest rookie campaigns of all time. I remember that one. Jeff Gordon's rookie year was – I know a lot of people hated him. But his rookie year, it was, you either loved it, you know, and you were part of the Rainbow Warrior Cavalry, or you hated him so much you were still talking about it and booing him every time he went around the track.
He was good his rookie year, but he didn't win in his rookie year. He started winning in year two in 1994. He was a contender in year one. He almost won the Daytona 500 that year, but I wouldn't say it's one of the greatest of the greats. It was a good
rookie. Do you think maybe – I was going to say maybe his is more notable because, I mean, he was so controversial. I think that might be what people remember most about it.
It's what happened immediately after his rookie year, years two and years three, that made him hate it.
Yeah, okay, makes sense to me. Texter says Jeff Gordon, Smoke disagrees, but I like where your head's at. Fernando Valenzuela still coming in. Shaq is coming in as well on the text line. Keep these coming. Greatest rookie years in sports history. And I'll go to the phone lines here because we've got a WFNZ legend who wants to weigh in on the greatest rookie seasons of all time. I bet you know who it is. The great Jim Solania is with us on the Technicom hotline. Jim, how you doing, buddy?
Papa Daddy, you're Papa Daddy. Big Daddy's taken, so you be Papa Daddy, okay?
I like that one. I like that one, too. So who's to you? I mean, Jim, you've got a heck of a memory here, and I know you've covered some greats in your career. Greatest rookie season of all time. Who you got for me?
I'm old enough to where I watched Frank Robinson play. And he had, I think, you could legitimately say he was rookie of the year in both leagues. But if you look at the trade or however that went down, rookie of the year in both leagues. Look up his numbers, though, once I'm off. I'm interested to hear those. I also covered Mark Bird Fidrich, Mark the Bird Fidrich, you know, in Evansville,
yeah,
when he pitched in the minors. But I think he had a sensational rookie year. I can't remember. The memory doesn't serve everything. It's just glimpses of a memory. Glimpses of a memory is better than a great memory. Well, no, it's not better than a great memory, but it still works. I mean, I watched Frank play. I mean, this guy was, he took no prisoners. Nobody gave him any grief, any crap. I mean, he was a man's man, and what a player he was. And as I recall, he had stellar numbers as a rookie in both leagues of play. You know, and I did want to mention this Hornet team and LaMelo. I can't imagine them not handing over the Rookie of the Year award to him. I mean, my God, if he doesn't win that, then there's something seriously wrong. And I would say, with all the players out on this team, it's incredible. It's incredible who's not playing. I would think this team will be in excess of 10 games above 500 next season. At least 10 games above 500. Do you agree?
I would. And, Jim, before I let you go, if you don't mind, I want to put you on the spot a little bit, but only because I know you're good at this sort of thing. I agree with you. The expectations go up, and I do want to talk about that. But Smoke and I were talking about something yesterday, maybe Sunday, that I wanted folks to weigh in on today. 25 years ago, and I know you know this very well, 25 years ago, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Del Curry, and Kerry Collins posed for that iconic photo. Collins, yeah. Earnhardt, and Curry. And 25 years later, Smoke and I were wondering aloud the other day, who would be on the updated version of that photo with those three, Earnhardt, Curry, and Collins? If you were to make an updated photo featuring the three most prominent Charlotte athletes right now, who's in that picture?
Oh, well, I wouldn't take any of those off of it, that's for sure.
Sure.
You've named them all. I mean, you can't let an icon photo like that get too big. Dale Earnhardt, I really, really, truly wonder how long he would have gone on driving. He would have beaten Petty, I think, that year. The year he was, I think he would have won the points that year he died. So he is foremost, and he was my man. I mean, when he went away, I stopped watching NASCAR. I came back to it, but not so much. So I would put him up there at front. What do you mean by modern-day rookies?
Well, so think about it this way. You know the iconic photo of Bo Jackson with the shoulder pads and the baseball bat? And a couple of years ago, Kyler Murray remade that picture, you know, also wearing the shoulder pads and a baseball bat. So we are actually replacing them in this sense, not that they don't belong in there anymore. It's just if you were to make an updated 2021 version of that photo, well, let's say LaMelo Ball, Christian McCaffrey, and, I don't know, Denny Hamlin, if you wanted to stay with NASCAR. Like, those are three that jumped to mind for me.
I would go with LaMelo. I think he's instilled a new energy in this market. And when you think about what he's got, I was watching a game with Jarvis when they beat Detroit in the garage, and I said to myself, can you imagine in the next 5 years, and so help me God, they better keep him forever, but can you imagine the passes we're going to see in the next 5 years from this cat? You know, he's just going to be, he's going to be so fantastic by the time he enters his second contract. It's unheard of. It's unspeakable. And he's getting better. He's made some careless passes after he came back. He'll wipe that up. He'll clean that up, you know. But I would put him first and foremost as rookies in the last foreseeable future.
I love it. Jim, thank you for the call. It's good to hear from you. Please don't be a stranger. You know I love these calls. Oh, we lost Jim. There we go. 704-570-9610. Jim Salania weighing in right there. I'll come back to the photo thing, but the photos, or rather the text coming in on the greatest rookie seasons of all time. These are fantastic. We got some Mets fans screaming about Pete Alonso back there. Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, Larry Bird coming in. Talked about those just a little while ago. David Robinson, Magic Johnson. One texter saying Magic won finals MVPs. Got to be on the list. Bo Jackson, more of Magic Johnson. Then we got the Fab Five coming in. And that one's interesting because I did say you could include maybe greatest rookie seasons or maybe freshman seasons as well. If we're talking about rookie campaigns, freshman seasons work in this conversation too. And the Fab Five being brought up there a moment ago. And I like that. I do, because it's a little bit unorthodox outside the box thinking, but when you consider, you know, who was in that Fab Five, not just Chris Webber and Jalen Rose and Juwan Howard, you know, but Jimmy King and Ray Jackson often are forgotten when we talk about the Fab Five. You know, Michigan's 1991 team, and just how great those freshmen were. All freshman starters. Weber, Rose, Juwan Howard, Jimmy King, and Ray Jackson. Those final two obviously don't get talked about quite as much, but the Fab Five is a very interesting outside-the-box suggestion there. And then Texter says those 2 weeks of Linsanity as a submission for the greatest rookie season of all time. Smoke, was that Linsanity stretch as exciting and fun as it was? I don't know that constitutes the best rookie season, though, right? I think it was a couple of weeks there where everybody went nuts. So what do you think about that?
That was more of a moment than a rookie year, in my opinion.
I think so.
It was about a month stretch, and it did help that he was in New York, of all places, while doing that, and Jeremy Lin, because, look, he came to Charlotte here for a year and had some moments as well that made you think of, like, it was a mini rebirth of Lin's sanity, but, you know, it got nowhere near as much of attention. He helped beat LeBron. The Hornets actually beat LeBron about 5 years ago, and it was because of Jeremy Lin. So it was moments like that that helped Jeremy Lin, but still, you didn't hear near as much about Jeremy Lin.
That's true. That's true. Keep them coming. The greatest rookie seasons in sports history, 704-570-9610. And yeah, we're having fun with this today, but there is some news to get to. I like what Solania said there at the end of his call, because I think he's right. For those that have been, let's just say, critical of, I don't know, me or anybody else who have been very much enthusiastic about the Hornets season and the job that James Borrego's done with this team, there's still some detractors and critics out there. There's still a couple of stragglers out there who don't believe in James Borrego or the direction of this organization. I do. I happen to be one of those that believes that they've shown that they know what they're doing, and that if the injuries hadn't, we hadn't seen an avalanche of injuries toward the end of the season, we'd be talking about a 36-37 win team right now. And in all likelihood, actually, if you look at the standings right now, in the top six at the very least, if you in that neighborhood of wins. So going into next season, a lot of this will depend upon the offseason roster moves that are made. You know, we're told they're still in pursuit maybe of Andre Drummond, Rashawn Holmes this offseason. I do think this roster will look, let's say, significantly different. Significant might mean different things to different people, but yeah, I think the expectations go up. The bar's been raised. You know, you're talking, Jim, about 10 games over 500 next year. I don't think that's outrageous, nor outside the realm of possibility. But regardless, expectations have gone up. If this team stays healthy next year and does not finish with a winning record, well, then I think that's a failure, and a failure to meet expectations. We have to talk about it in those terms. Right now, not ready to do that because this team is still young and experienced and very, very injured. But yeah, I do think for those that, you know, want to see the heat turned up a little bit, next year's the year where you expect this team to win. And if they don't, well, the criticism is warranted. We'll come back live from Quail Hollow. Got plenty of things planned, including Chip Carey, the voice of the Braves, joining me here in about 45 minutes. And if you missed Brady Christensen, new Panthers tackle, he joined me this morning. We'll have that for you coming up in the 1 o'clock hour as well. When we return, though, the dispenser of wisdom is here, folks. He's a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, if you didn't know it. Darren Gant, stopping by the tent for a couple of minutes to talk some Panthers football. That's next, live from Quail Hollow. You're in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ. Live from Quail Hollow, you're in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ, or more colloquially, Quail Holler. Good to be back with you. Wells Fargo Championship 2021, Kyle Bailey with you, live from Quail. Smoke Ludwig back in the studio. And before we get to a very special guest, a couple of things I want to mention here as we get set to keep on cruising here in the show. First things first, it is time for you to get in to win a pair of tickets to see Genesis, the Last Domino Tour with Phil Collins. Go to WFNZ.com's contest page now and enter the keyword Phil, P-H-I-L, for your shot at two tickets to the show on November 20th at the Spectrum Center. Again, WFNZ.com's contest page. Enter keyword Phil, P-H-I-L, for a pair of tickets, the chance to win a pair of tickets to see Phil Collins and Genesis, the Last Domino Tour, November 20th at the Spectrum Center. So again, coming up in 40 minutes, Chip Carey, the voice of the Braves, will join me. We'll talk about a handful of things with Chip. Lots of things. Exciting night last night. Braves beat the Nationals. We'll get to that. And if you miss Brady Christensen, left tackle for the Panthers, 70th overall pick, he joined us right off the top this morning. We'll have that for you coming up here in about an hour. But right now, live and on location, I learned a thing about Darren Gant this morning. He's wearing a Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame polo.
That's right.
There's a story there, I'm sure. Darren Gant, dispenser of wisdom, Panthers.com. He's Uncle DG to us. He's with us on location. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. DeLome's just a little salty because I'm in the hall and he's not.
Did you really say that to him once upon a time? Did you flash that polo?
It's possible that, you know, we've made that joke before, but I have been known to go back to the well time and again. But anyway, no, it's there's some friends down there. I helped them out with the writing contest they did, so they sent me free stuff. And you know the rule. If somebody sends me free clothes, I'll wear them.
That's absolutely true. So what's a football writer doing at a golf tournament?
Well, they're football people here.
That's true.
Shaq Thompson was out there belting it around this morning. He's playing in the Pro-Am. Christian will be out here, Christian McCaffrey, later on this afternoon. I'm sure he'll draw quite a crowd, you know, among the other luminaries out here on the property. So, yeah, there's football people around. So I managed to sneak my way past security and duck in here.
So you've been out walking the course a little bit. Did you happen to run into what I can only assume is an army following Roy Williams and Mac Brown this morning?
There were some crowds out there. There are a lot of Tar Heels on this property, believe it or not.
That makes sense to me, especially given it being Roy Williams celebration day here at the Wells Fargo Pro-Am.
And it's good to see those crowds out here again. It's just so good to be in a crowd. I mean, you're doing that promo for the concert, and it's like, we miss concerts.
Right?
We miss being at stuff.
Right.
And so just being out here, I mean, and that's the neat thing about this event. You don't have to walk this property long before you run into somebody you know.
Yep.
You're going to see a friend. You're going to see a neighbor. You're going to see, different folks. And that's already happened to me out here today, too. So it feels good to be in the building. We've had sports for a while, and they've been happening effectively in TV studios. And now you're actually out here, and there's stuff happening, and it's just a neat feeling.
Well, you said it best. I mean, you walk around long enough, you're going to run into somebody you either know or know of. Two years ago, I literally almost ran headfirst into Luke Kuechly, or vice versa, a.k.a. I nearly went on the IR for about 8 weeks. But everybody's out here. It's a great event.
Yep.
And, you're here. I know some of the players are here. And you and I have been talking so much about the draft lately. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be honest, people got draft fatigue. We've been at it for weeks and months, and we finally got here. And I talked to Matt Rhule yesterday. They're feeling pretty good about their draft class, aren't they?
They really are, and they're feeling pretty good about the way it came together. I think this year, and I wrote this the other night as it was all kind of coming together, this draft was kind of the recognition of where they actually are in the process of building. This was and I don't know if it was 100% that way last year, because last year you sort of walk in the door and you see all these parts, and it's like, wow, there's Christian McCaffrey. Things look pretty good at a certain level, and then it got young in a hurry, and then things got weird. And this year was the time when I think they took kind of a clear-eyed look at the roster and said, we need more stuff. And if you look at who's under contract for 22 and 23, that list gets shorter and shorter. So this was kind of a chance to hit reset, and buying in bulk was part of the process. And Brady Christensen, who you mentioned, he's a guy they're really excited about, maybe at a couple of positions. He's, they think he can contribute pretty quickly. It's just a matter of finding out where, and that's kind of where they are. They've got all this new stuff, and now they're in the process of seeing how it all fits together, and that's going to be the job for the next couple months.
It's interesting because, and look, you've been around here longer than I have, and you've seen a lot of things happen on the sports landscape here, but it feels like the two big professional sports organizations in this city, from a management and organizational standpoint, have really started to turn a corner here over the last 6 months. Do you feel that way?
It does feel that way. I mean, it's interesting because, again, it makes me feel old sometimes, but it's been a long time since both teams have been good or interesting, or even where you felt they weren't dysfunctional in some way. I mean, one or the other was always down here in the gutter, and it's been a long time since they were both kind of arcing in a positive direction. And I mean, it's been interesting to me following along, Hornets as you can if you're a cord cutter, and seeing what's happening with the Panthers right now. I mean, there was a very tangible feeling of coming out of that draft of, okay, there's direction now. There's a clear vision of what you want it to look like. And if Sam Darnold can play well, they'll be on the upswing soon.
Matt Rhule told me yesterday that basically, his approach or his, I guess, thought process as it pertained to Sam Darnold and J.C. Horn in the first round was, I mean, it felt like it was along the same lines of thinking with the numbers game of the draft, because he said, look, I'd rather have a quarterback that we like and a potential lockdown corner, than drafting a single quarterback in the first round.
Exactly.
And he made the point of emphasizing yesterday, you know, that as I've been saying, no matter how much you like Justin Fields, and I do, I still think he should have been the second quarterback off the board personally. The odds say that the majority of these guys in the first round are not going to turn into franchise quarterbacks.
No, they're not. And that's a good way of looking at it, is basically it's Sam Darnold and J.C. Horn instead of just Justin Fields. Because if you don't have Sam, then you're kind of obligated. And they talked about that a lot, of filling in so many blanks in free agency and other moves they made that allowed them to kind of be in that spot where, listen, I don't know exactly how the conversation's gone around here, but I kind of get a sense of comments and stuff like that. I think J.C. Horn came out of the blue for some people, but J.C. Horn's that guy, and they haven't had that guy at that position for a long time. Even when Josh Norman was here and playing at a Pro Bowl level, it took Josh Norman 5 years of building up. I mean, he was a game-day healthy scratch a lot in his first couple years. They haven't had that corner that you look at and say, okay, there goes half the field. Since Chris Gamble or Kenny Lucas, I mean, it's been a long time since they've had that kind of dog. And Horn is, he's that dude. And I think people are going to be pretty excited when they get him out there on the field.
Well, and I do think pre-draft perceptions being what they are factor into how people feel about draft picks and the immediate reaction to it, because everybody now is conditioned to read all the mock drafts and you know, buy into the narratives of who's rising and who's falling. But the truth is, as you just, I think, alluded to, you know, I know the conversations that I had with people in that building, they were pointing me in the direction of J.C. Horn for about 3 weeks leading up to the draft, you know, saying, we really, really like this kid.
And
so they take him, and that was one of the two biggest positions of need for this team, if we're being honest. We knew they needed a left tackle, but we also knew they still needed quarterback
and
help.
And they were right there. I mean, they were one pick away from Penei Sewell dropping into their laps. And you know, that would have probably been the guy. You know, I don't feel like that's a stretch by any imagination. But, you know, they were that close to having that box checked off. And, you know, that's, again, they've got some options. We'll see with what they did deeper in the draft. I mean, getting Christensen, I think he's a good value based on where they had him pegged on the board. I'm fascinated to see Deontay Brown. I mean, you know me, I like old man football. So big guys, big fellas are interesting to me. And between Deontay Brown and this guy, David Moore, the undrafted rookie from Grambling that they signed.
Two monsters.
That's 700 pounds of person that you could conceivably see in the second half of a preseason game this year. And I saw it at the Senior Bowl when I was down there in Mobile in January, and you see that much mass next to each other, and it's like, okay, that's something you can work with. You can only do certain things, but you can do things definitely in a big way with those two cats there. So a lot of competition, a lot of numbers. I mean, they went out and signed three free agents. They drafted a couple and brought in another undrafted. So numbers at that position, and now they just got to sort.
Darren Gant, Panthers.com, hanging out with us for just a couple more minutes here, live from Quail Hollow, 2021 Wells Fargo Championship. It's Pro-Am Day here at Quail. Two things. Just to that point, when I heard Matt Rhule say, if you have to scheme up your running game every week, you don't have a running game.
Yeah,
When I saw Deontay Brown and David Moore, those picks specifically, and then, of course, the emphasis on getting Brady Christensen, I mean, you get an idea between that and Matt Rhule, I think, really just reemphasizing, we don't expect Sam to come in here and be the savior. We need Sam to show up and work every day, and he's only going to be as good as the guys around him. I think they're going to run the ball a ton this year.
Yeah, they should, and that's the thing. And hopefully, for Sam Darnold's sake, Christian stays healthy and is able to play a little more than he was last year. And that's the key to it all. I mean, you got to be lucky in addition to some of this other stuff. But, yeah, they're absolutely, I think, trying to insulate that position. And again, I don't know how the reaction's been to Sam around here, but Sam gives them an opportunity to build a whole team. I mean, I know there were names at quarterback that got talked about early in the offseason that didn't get traded for. And there were other opportunities. And Sam might not be the sexiest name at quarterback, and it might not work. I mean, there is also that possibility. I mean, we're not sure. I mean, they've got to do stuff around him, but they're giving him a chance to be successful that he never enjoyed in New York.
You said something, I think you just mentioned it a moment ago, Bally Sports Southeast, you know, difficulty watching the Hornets this year. I've railed about it. You know, I do think I had some guy, some jackwagon on the text line 2 days ago saying, you know, you always bring this up, but I've been telling you for months, all these people have to do is buy a VPN and pay $20 a month and you can watch. Like, dude, do you realize how many people, A, don't want to go through the trouble,
yeah.
You know, B, don't have the additional income to spend, even if $20 is nothing to you, C, older viewers who might not be as inclined to deal right. with those things. Can you imagine the NFL allowing something like this to happen?
Oh, gosh.
I mean,
yeah.
I'd like what the NBA's done in a lot of ways, but can you imagine the NFL letting this kind of issue proceed throughout a season like
well,
this?
Well, and I think they're taking baby steps in that direction. I mean, when you see the Thursday night games go Amazon only in, what is it, 22 or 23? I mean, there's going to be a time where streaming is the avenue, but no, they couldn't. I mean, it's all about access to the product. And, I mean, that's what's curious to me. When I've been able to see the Hornets on a national broadcast, follow along highlights on Twitter, it's like, whoa, that's a team that a lot of people, that would be easy to like. You would get excited about that. There's no doubt. But no, I don't ever imagine a situation, because the NFL knows that what it's got going for it is momentum. It's everywhere. I mean, it's May and we're talking about post-NFL draft right now. And in a couple weeks, we'll be talking about rookie minicamp. And in a couple weeks after that, we'll be talking about OTAs. And a month after that, we'll be talking about training camp. And they've managed to monopolize the entire calendar.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think that this is, and I, by the way, have my own issues with why the NFL won't expand the availability of some games on Sunday instead of just locking into networks. But again, the NFL, I cannot imagine the National Football League letting this kind of issue persist the way that it has.
No.
I just have a hard time with it. Darren Gant, good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, man, good to see you.
Great to see you.
Hopefully they don't throw me out of this place.
I don't think they will. Just keep flashing that Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame polo. Right. I think that'll get you in just about anywhere. 704-570-9610. Texters coming in with a lot of good stuff. Tim with a great point saying, don't forget about Tommy Trimble as a blocker. He's going to add some nasty to this team in a great way. Totally agree. I appreciate you, Tim. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the hour. And there is something that we've been holding on to that I want to talk to. In fact, Darren Gant's kind of perfect for this conversation, and I hate that he's leaving. I'll get his answer off the air. The iconic photo that I brought up with Jim Salania about 30 minutes ago. Dale Earnhardt Jr., Del Curry, Kerry Collins. 1996. Hard to believe it's 25 years ago. DG is wincing as I say that. An updated version of that photo today, 2021, who would be in the updated version of that three-headed sports monster? LaMelo, Christian McCaffrey, Denny Hamlin, Dale Jr. I mean, a lot of names have come up on Twitter especially. Who would be on that updated iconic photo that featured Dale Earnhardt Jr., Del Curry, and Kerry Collins? Speaking of great rookie seasons, by the way, Kerry Collins. We'll come back. We'll take your answers. More to get to. And Chip Carey, the voice of the Braves, joins me in 25 minutes. Live from Quail Hollow. You're in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ. You know, on Roy Williams Appreciation Day here at Quail Hollow, a lot of you are taking the opportunity to jump on Roy today. And, you know, I'm sure Duke fans think it's funny. State fans think it's funny. Carolina fans probably not so much. But it is the 2021 Wells Fargo Championship. We're live from Quail Hollow today, tomorrow, and Friday. And it is Roy Williams Day. Gary Sova, tournament director here at the Wells Fargo Championship, joined me earlier in the show, and he said, hey, Roy's here. He's golfing with Mack Brown and Gary Woodland and Will Zalatoris, who, if you didn't watch the Masters and you're not a diehard golf fan, you might not have a clue who Will Zalatoris is. But, you know, he was the youngster that really, really played well at the Masters, was on an exemption, I believe, and on an exemption this week as well at the Wells Fargo Championship. That's the guy that Adam Sandler called out on Twitter as looking like the young caddy from Happy Gilmore. That Will Zalatoris, playing alongside Roy and Mac and Gary Woodland today. And I'm getting texts like this one. Earlier, we were talking about the Yankees booing the Astros last night in Yankee Stadium, and a texter hits in to go, hey, good transition from the cheating Astros to cheating Roy Williams. Nice work, KB. That was the first one that came in. And then a little bit later in the show, somebody else saying, oh, I got to find this one too because I want to read it verbatim. Somebody else essentially said, oh, Roy Williams is out there, huh? Did you say it's Roy Williams Day at Quail Hollow? Does that mean they're handing out free UNC Chapel Hill AFAM degree diplomas from somebody else? And then another one came in seconds later saying somebody better watch Roy Williams, otherwise he's going to turn in a scorecard with a 59 on it this afternoon. Smoke, these people are relentlessly going after Roy Williams this afternoon.
You mean NC State fans?
Well, probably you're right.
There's a 95% chance they're NC State fans. Usually Duke fans don't make those types of jokes consistently that much and that overbearing. It's always usually NC State fans.
That's true. You're right about that. I'll say that. It is, but that's the thing. I mean, it's what makes this job fun, and I love the rivalry, but that's low. Can the guy just enjoy his pro-am day here at Quail Hollow? I don't think we're going to get him into the tent for an interview, but we'll try if we can. Max Homa, by the way, defending Wells Fargo Championship winner from 2019, also going to be roaming around here, and I think actually is right now. And if we can snag him and throw a headset on him, we will. Only because Max Homa joined me after winning the Wells Fargo 2 years ago and was one of the most fun interviews that I think I've ever done. If memory serves, Smoke, I think Max Homa the year prior on the, what was it, the web.com tour earned about $20,000 total. His tour card was in jeopardy. He may have even lost his tour card at one point, and then comes out and wins the Wells Fargo Championship 2 years ago and is turned into a Twitter superstar. Like, do you follow Max Homa on Twitter?
Yeah. I remember the interview being so good with us that I decided to follow him, and I didn't expect him to become such a Twitter superstar with rating people's golf swings and everything else.
Oh, he's fantastic. If you don't follow Max Homa on Twitter, he's hilarious because he's got a shtick. He's like, it's genuinely funny stuff, but he makes fun of average golf swings. It's hysterical. Defending Wells Fargo champion Max Homa out here today, and if we can snag him, we will. If not, we'll try to get him on throughout the week, and we will be here tomorrow and Friday as the tournament gets underway, and of course, all kinds of leaderboard updates and things along those lines. Before I get to that iconic image of Dale Sr., Del Curry and Kerry Collins, I had to bring this up because Billy DeMarlin and I were talking about this earlier in the show and between the breaks. The Mac Attack this morning, they were talking, Smoke, about the Star Wars-themed game at Yankee Stadium last night between the Yanks and the Astros. And we were having some fun with the booing, which was awesome. But Mac and Bone start launching into how, you know, Star Wars fans might be the most obnoxious, insufferable fans of a movie franchise. And I think they even included TV shows as well. But that Star Wars fans might be the worst. And I noticed that it's devolved into, you know, Star Wars fans now coming at those of us who haven't seen the Star Wars franchise, accusing us of some weird flex, saying they don't care that we've never seen Star Wars. I don't know how this got so hostile. I've never once said that Star Wars fans were the worst, but I got to be honest, I'm disappointed this morning. You've seen all the Star Wars movies, right, Smoke?
Yeah.
Okay, you've seen them all. So it's tough then. I don't know if I can ask you this question. Are Star Wars fans the most obnoxious movie franchise fans in the world? Or do you think is it Harry Potter fans or Lord of the Ring fans? Or, I don't know, you tell me. Are they the worst?
They're the most hostile, I think. I don't think they're, like, they're annoying. These last few years have definitely proven that they're extremely annoying, and every little detail and every little thing, like, it's a movie, guys. And it's a TV show. It's this. It's that. It's nothing for people to get bent out of shape about.
It's become a culture war thing.
Yeah, and ever since they switched to Disney, there's been such split opinions upon the movies that Disney has made that it's made it even worse. It is unbearable. So I don't blame you. Like, honestly, if you want to watch the movies, you watch them, but don't get all, you know, nerded out. And I don't think you can at this point because, you know, I grew up watching the movies. It's something that if you're a kid, I feel like you'll be more of a nerd about it. But, I mean, you're an adult now, so I don't think you'll be going marking out over Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. I mean, the only thing you really know from Star Wars is what an Ewok is, which I think you just gave. Whenever you say that, I feel like a nerd just gets a stroke and saying, that was the worst thing about the originals, guys. Come on.
Was it really?
That's what some people think, yes.
Is that a widely held opinion? Because that truly, I know of Luke, yes, Skywalker and Darth Vader, and I've seen some Ewoks. That's what I know.
Yeah, Ewoks are considered one of the worst things of the original series, which just shows how good the original series is, if that's
right.
The worst. But, you know,
see, like, I will say this. You know, I like the conversation this morning because, like, Seinfeld fans, the guy that quotes Seinfeld all the time is terrible. He's obnoxious, and I get it. You know, I heard Mac bring up fans of The Office this morning. I didn't like that one very much. I just think that, again, they become very, very aggressive. It's become a culture wars thing. And somebody asks, slow sports day on the text line? No, this ties into last night's game between the Astros and the Yankees. Because last night's Astros-Yankees game at Yankee Stadium was an ESPN Star Wars-themed telecast with Carl Ravitch as Luke Skywalker and Steve Levy, I believe, is Darth Vader. Tim Kirchin was Yoda. Other broadcasters dressed up in various different Star Wars outfits last night. Like, I understand the cross-promotion part of this. We saw the NFL broadcast a playoff game on Nickelodeon. We've seen the NBA team up with the Marvel Comics universe. So, you know, it's ESPN, it's Disney. As you just said, Star Wars now a Disney-owned franchise and product. You understand why they're pushing it. It's a cross-promotion, and it's a huge fan base. Like, it is a huge, huge fan base. And I thought it was actually a creative thing. It wasn't for me necessarily, but I thought it was a creative thing that sports did last night, that baseball did, in the same vein as the NFL and the NBA, to cross-promote and, quite honestly, to try to attract and engage younger sports fans. How often do we talk about young sports fans watching and consuming sports differently than we did? I mean, I'm a millennial. And the Gen Z kids are doing things differently than we did. The next generation after them will be the same. They'll do things differently. So you're seeing these sports, as I've been saying for a year now, needing to reevaluate their relationship with the fan, and they're using popular movie franchises. And I guess in the case of Marvel Comics, popular, you know, comic book, universes, smoke is the right way to say it. Like, this is, I think, a creative way to try to engage young fans. It's not for everybody, but I do appreciate the effort and the willingness to be a little bit creative. Uh-oh, I think we lost smoke. 704-570-9610. Texter saying, the old Star Wars kind of suck. The new ones are actually pretty good, but I don't understand why people act so crazy about it. I've seen all of them, but I don't really care if anybody else has or not, or don't get upset about it. That's how I feel. But it's become this thing where even if I just say, hey, I haven't seen them, I get jumped on for not having seen Star Wars. Good on baseball, though, for doing that. And I do think, again, this is a theme and a growing part of sports in today's age, where it's not just football and Nickelodeon, basketball and Marvel Comics, baseball and Star Wars. I mean, Smoke, you've talked a lot about what NASCAR's done to try to engage younger audiences. The iRacing, possible street racing coming up. I don't think the dirt in Bristol was necessarily for the Gen Z kids, you know, but they're going to extra lengths to try to make this a little bit cooler and younger and more interactive. People better get used to this stuff, Smoke, because that's what's going to keep coming.
Yeah, the Bushy McBush race is putting butts in seats, that's for sure. No, I'm joking, but yeah, I mean, they've really gone outside the box over the years. Like, I think I mentioned to you a couple years ago, they had two races at Chicagoland where it was called the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 400, where the winner would get slimed. So,
yes.
Just some of that stuff. Like, that was pretty cool, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants 400, they literally colored the walls in SpongeBob skin color and all that. They had the mascots, the trophy was a SpongeBob SquarePants trophy that had his face on it, stuff like that. So, I mean, NASCAR's gone outside the box, too, and I probably will see them continue to go outside the box as well.
I think so, too. 704-570-9610. Again, send me – and see, this is what I'm saying. Somebody right here, text message. I don't know if it's sarcastic or not, but all caps. KB, you haven't seen Star Wars. Wait, what? What a slappy. See? They get offended. I don't know if he's upset or not, but that's the text I get all the time. The iconic photo. We've gotten carried away with the Star Wars here, but the 96 photo of Dale Sr., Del Curry, and Kerry Collins. Right, the three biggest, arguably, stars in Charlotte sports at that time. Here we are 25 years later. Who would you put in an updated photo as the three biggest three-headed monster of Charlotte sports stars today? And as I was talking about it with Gant and Billy DeMarlin during the break, Billy made a great point. He said, hey, 5 years ago, you know, you probably would have had an updated picture of Cam Newton, Kemba Walker, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. 5 years ago, Smoke, I think it would have been nearly a lock. That would have been your updated photo, Cam Newton, Kemba Walker, and Dale Jr. Yes, that would have been an easy recreation.
It would have not been hard. I remember people talking about that at the time, and to quote Ron Rivera, that was a humongous missed opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what it probably would have been 5 years ago. But in 2021, I think LaMelo Ball, Christian McCaffrey, and maybe Denny Hamlin is the name that I would throw in there. A texter asked during the break, he says, the question I have is, does the driver have to be from around here or just for one of the race teams? Because my first thought is CMC, LaMelo, and Chase Elliott. That's from Scott about 15 minutes ago. And we talked about that too, because no, I don't think it needs to be the case. Del Curry is from the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia. Off the top of my head, I don't know exactly where Kerry Collins is from, Smoke. Maybe you do. But
Pennsylvania.
No, I don't. Pennsylvania. I don't think that's a prerequisite at all. That's an iconic photo both obviously here in Charlotte and the Carolinas bigger here. You know, but that's a photo that's recognized by a lot of folks around the country who were sports fans back in 96. I think it would be LaMelo, Christian McCaffrey, and probably if you had to say a NASCAR driver, Denny Hamlin would be the guy that would come to mind. But, you know, maybe it's not that. I mean, there's nobody from the Charlotte FC you're throwing on there. You know, maybe there's a golfer. Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe Harold Varner.
Harold Varner.
I'm trying to think.
Webb Simpson lives in Charlotte.
That's one that I
would throw out there, too. That iconic photo.
I think we're forgetting some drivers. I feel like Denny isn't the only driver you can mention. You can easily mention Kevin Harvick, who's been here for 20 years at this point, and is just as big of a name, if not a bigger name, than Denny Hamlin, and has had, you know, more success than Denny. I mean, it's pretty hard to top Denny, but Kevin somehow has. But I think that you're picking, you know, hairs at this point. But I just feel like it's been way past time, and I think I just saw it on the page, and I'm like, why have we not recreated this photo? It's been too long. We need to recreate it every 15 to 20 years to show the people of Charlotte, like, how the culture has changed in the sports area.
Yeah, you brought that up to me a couple of days ago, and I thought it was great. I think you're right. It'd be cool to update that every 5 years or so, 10 years or so, just as a cool thing to do for Charlotte sports. But anyway, we'll come back, final hour of the show. If you missed it this morning, had a good conversation with the Panthers' new left tackle, Brady Christensen. You'll hear that coming up in about 30 minutes, that is. But when we come back, Chip Carey, the voice of the Atlanta Braves, picked up a big divisional win last night, and they got a pitcher in Atlanta who's not just throwing it well, he's hitting it well too. Huascar Ulloa goes deep again last night, hits a grand slam. We'll talk to Chip Carey next here in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ.